Hey, White Sox fans, recording is in progress. Believe in White Sox, podcast number two. I am Brett Ballantini, your host. Co-hosting with me again is Tommy Barbie. Welcome, Tommy.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
We're going to get to Tony La Russa. I mean, I know that's what everybody wants to hear. We're going to get to Tony La Russa.
Shocking.
But we are going to push that to the end. We're dirty. We're going to wait, make you wait. So we're going to get to Tony. Plus, here's the challenge. We got to sort of ramp up the first half of this podcast, just talking White Sox, to sort of establish a PG-13 or lower level podcast. Because frankly, I mean, let's just break it down right now, Tommy. Hello, Mrs. Barbie. Hello, Pops Barbie. Hello, Mom's Barbie. Hello, Barbie sons and Barbie daughter. And I think at this point right now, Tommy, we're pretty much covering the balance of the listenership. And why not personalize it?
Exactly. You know, we might get to the point where it's like every podcast has a customized introduction for each one of our listeners, you know?
I am older than you, Tommy, but you might even remember the Romper Room days where at some point didn't they have some magic mirror or something where they got to actually say like, hello, Tommy,
yes.
Hello, Brett, and you'd be at home. You'd be like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh, they know.
They're talking to me. So we might be able to pull the White Sox believe in White Sox magic mirror out. But you know, at this point, by podcast number two, Tommy, I'm thinking we're talking hundreds, if not thousands. So this just might be, this is going to be the rare podcast where we can probably just thank all the listeners personally. So thank you, Barbies. And let me ask you this, Tommy, because I'm usually good about making sure I got pronunciations, and Barbie seems very straightforward, but you know, if it's Barbie, Barbie or Barb and silent, I mean, I gotta know, because I don't want it to sound like I already blew it with the Southside Sox La Russa podcast by blowing a name, so I don't want to keep doing that. So we're Barbies.
Yeah,
okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to be pretentious in French, which, you know, it is based on French, then, you know, we could do the Barbie angle.
Okay.
But otherwise, no, Barbie is totally fine.
All right. So welcome back to Believe in White Sox. I'm Brett Ballantini with Tommy Barbie, and we are going to be talking White Sox now. And let's jump into it, Tommy, and let's talk about this last week in White Sox baseball. We had a series against Kansas City where it seemed like the White Sox were maybe falling into some ugly past habits of not converting runners, offense. Yep. That was not executing very well, did manage to scrape through the Royals series with a split, then really had a sweep laid out for them with Minnesota and found sort of a way to snatch a defeat from victory to just take two out of three there. But really, all in all, given the circumstances and given some circumstances we'll get to later, not a bad week.
No, not bad at all. I mean, I think it's only disappointing based on how the White Sox played up to those respective series where they had been really scoring runs at a proficient rate. You weren't seeing a lot of the kind of miscues that were happening that ended up happening in both the Royals and the Twins series, quite honestly. And, you know, the bullpen was doing, looked like it was turning a corner too. And then that came an issue in those series as well.
I mean, how crazy is it? We talked about this in the first podcast a week ago, Tommy, and it still holds. This starting rotation, going into this week, as of our last podcast, you might look at Lucas Giolito as the weakest link, and he comes out and throws a killer game against Minnesota. Exactly what you needed from him, what we've come to expect from him, and how he started this season. It seemed like some of his stats took a dip, and I guess some of his pitch effectiveness had taken a dip, but it seemed like it was almost unfair to Lucas. He had those couple cheapy homers against, yep, Kansas City. I think maybe a little bit of a deceptive story. If you just look at the stats with Lucas, he maybe hasn't taken the step back that we think, but it was still great to see him execute the high changeup, pretty much execute his game just this very last one against the Twins.
Yeah, absolutely. And there've been some really interesting articles about where he's at with his stuff and like how much of a drop off there really is, because it seems like it's been a really weird combination of bad luck and not quite having the same mechanics repeated that he had last year. and just the combination of the two causing a lot of those cheapy home runs where even, you know, even when he was pitching well, it was like, okay, he still needed to get out of certain innings where typically you're used to him just kind of cruising through like he did in his most recent game. And I think it was good for both, you know, the fan base, but also for himself to kind of have that type of game of dominance against the Twins where it was, you know, eight innings of him basically back to what he looked like last year. And he, you could tell he had that bit of swagger where even going into the eighth inning, he still never lost that focus where you look at some of the earlier games where he was a little bit, you know, a little bit ragged by the time you hit the seventh or eighth inning. So it was refreshing to see.
Suffice to say, if your ace, the guy who's a Cy Young contender, a month and a half into the season, or even 2 months in the season, is considered maybe your weak link so far in the season, that's probably a really good sign.
And I guess
taking a step back, I mean, it's interesting that the roles have reversed and that everybody sort of universally said that there's one thing we didn't have to worry about with this White Sox team would be the bullpen. And as it turns out, maybe the thing that is potentially the most worrisome in the three aspects of the game, I guess if you throw out defense, would be the bullpen, because really to a man, there's been some erraticness. Maybe Kopech is the exception. But the good news is, and again, I'm not French. You just pronounce my name like it sounds. But Tommy, it would seem like having a little bit of trouble in the bullpen is a better problem to have than a problem in the rotation, because it would seem like there are maybe decreasingly likelihood of successful arms coming up from the minors or even through a waiver wire or through a trade. Bullpen wise, there's more margin for error. They have less impact on the game than your starters. The fact that the White Sox have like five, maybe six solid core starters, it's just got to make you feel great for the last, you know, three quarters of the season.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that even on Twitter, there have been like starting to be like those ruminations of, oh, are they going to get a bullpen arm? They need a veteran. They need a bullpen guy. And it's like, you can find a bullpen arm. Like there's always guys out there that are effective in limited runs.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. So you're happy, like you said, that it isn't a rotation guy that you need to rely on every 5 days. You can get yourself a bullpen arm. It might be in the minors right now, or it could be somebody that they pick up during the course of the season, where maybe closer to the trade deadline, if they need another person, they'll pick somebody up. But that's really not something that I think Sox fans need to be concerned about, because it will come. Like, it'll either be one of these guys like Foster that either gets hot and starts pitching more effectively, or it might be somebody else comes up and, you know, next man up, and they are able to convert in key situations to help move the Sox along.
You know, traditionally we would probably push this to the very end of the podcast, but let's not do that, because we're going to keep teasing our audience. And next up, we do have the Yankees. And I think right after that, we have the Cardinals. So we have some sort of prime baseball nation fan bases that we're going to be going up against. We're going to get the primetime experience, which is playing the Yankees in New York versus even playing them in Chicago is different. We're going to New York. That was Aloy's coming out party a year ago when he had his first two major league home runs in the rain. Sort of beautiful. White Sox did well against the Yankees last year. We certainly expect them to do the same, because the Yankees aren't necessarily all that in 2021. But what are some things to jump out at you in terms of anticipating and having some excitement for this series?
Yeah, I mean, I think not only are they facing the Yankees, but they're also facing Gerrit Cole. And of all matchups in the world, it will be Dylan Cease versus Gerrit Cole. And I think it will have a lot more eyeballs on the Dylan Cease experience, where which one are you going to get? You know, Voit's back in the lineup for the Yankees, so there is some pop there between him and Judge. But beyond that, you're looking at a lot of guys that have either been hurt or haven't performed at the level that most people expect. And I think that really bodes well for a White Sox pitching staff that, even when they walk guys, they're still relatively close to the plate. And, you know, the Yankees have been pressing for a while on offense. And, you know, if they're over aggressive, this could be a really interesting series for the White Sox pitching.
It goes without saying the ratio of hype to actual performance for the Yankees is always at the highest level in the major leagues.
And absolutely,
to some degree, they can't help that. Okay, and they're New York. MLB, when Aaron Judge sneezes, they tweet out the video and everybody has to watch it. And when Gary Sanchez, you know, falls over in the dugout falls and laughs over. About yeah. it, they got to tweet that video out. I mean, it's just ahead of Javi Baez highlights being tweeted out mm-hmm. by MLB and Cut Four. And, you know, to some degree, I suppose they can't help that, but it would be nice to put them in their place and take at least a good 2 out of 3 in this series coming up. Dylan Cease, I got to say, I like his chances against Gerrit Cole because, you know, let's hype some of the work we do. You know, Tommy at Southside Sox, obviously it's not a Believe blog, but this is the work we do. And if people want to get to know us better, that's where they're going to check out Southside Sox, White Sox site where our writing is. And we had a piece today that sort of broke down in a very irreverent and entertaining way, broke down the romper look that the White Sox sported on their getaway. They took the tarmac photo, team shot of probably 30, 40 guys all decked out in various resting outfits. And I got to say, Dylan C seems like he's actually taking notice of the fact that he's getting some, let's just say, some really positive feedback on Dylan C. Yeah. That's got to make a guy feel good. Even a guy as low-key as this. Not that necessarily anybody's going to be watching this video, but Dylan Cease's range of emotion is pretty much, I'm even not
pretty straightforward.
Well. It's yeah. about as zen and serious as possible. And if the guy ever throws a no-hitter, he's going to still sound just like this, and he mm-hmm. probably won't even laugh. So the fact that he's even taking notice of the fact that he's getting some positive attention out there, let's just leave it at that. That's only got to buoy the guy going into a pretty big, I mean, arguably maybe the biggest start of his career. You know, I mean, I don't know if that's apples, oranges, or
no, I think that's accurate, because I mean, you know, Cease, even in terms of like the trade and everything else, he's always been the guy that's been kind of under the radar. So this really probably is his biggest start in terms of having the most attention, you know, pitching in Yankee Stadium. And I do think there will be a fair amount of national attention on the series.
At some point, Tommy, we're probably even going to just inject even weirder little sideline topics. Because again, at this point, we're pretty much just talking to your family. Hey, Barbies.
It's exactly.
You know, you guys still, hey, don't go to sleep yet, guys. Don't go to sleep yet. It's not over. Your dad's still talking.
Yes.
you know, so probably might get crazier, probably might get into music or movies or who knows. But right now, I think one thing to do as we seg into the inevitable topic that will end this podcast is I just want to find out maybe what your experience was as a first White Sox game.
So it's so funny that you brought this up because I have, well, for one, you can guess probably who the manager was for the team that I saw them play against.
I'm scared for you because the answer is just not going to be good. I mean, the scariest one would be Terry Bevington, but
no, no, okay. Thank God. No, no, it was actually, the first game that I remember, I don't know if it's the first game that I went to, but it was the Sox against the Oakland A's, and Tony La Russa at that point was managing the A's.
Okay.
And it was a absolute blowout because that was, of course, you know, you had your Bash brothers, Ricky Henderson, Mark McGwire, I think hit like this towering home run. And I just remember it being like the longest, most excruciating experience in my life. And, you know, the entire time, like the 1990 White Sox weren't bad by any stretch. So I was just like, why is this game going so poorly? I thought this team was good.
So what's interesting is you got in a game under the wire. You actually did see a game in Old Comiskey.
I did. Yes. I went to a few games at Old Comiskey and I do remember it pretty well. I don't remember it as well as like Old Chicago Stadium, which I kind of regret not being able to like see and experience it because like, it just, to me, the photos of old Comiskey look more pristine than you see like of any of the old ballparks from that era. And, you know, just it's such a departure from what there is now that it's just kind of like, I don't think people really appreciated what the old ballpark had to offer in terms of character or charm.
Yeah. Tommy, my first game, the manager. Oh, go ahead. Guess who the manager was for my first White Sox game. Be careful.
I was just going to say Tony La Russa just to keep it consistent.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not far off. I do predate that. I'm a Southside Hitman baby. So it was Bob Lemon. My first game was 1977. Yep. Okay. And what made the game for me, unlike yours, that you're remembering like, oh, my God, is this game going to get over? I, you know, coughing through whatever, I'm sure smoke in the grandstand, etc. You know, as a kid, was there with a bunch of like hell raising beer drinking friends of my dad, and I was just there, and I'm sure he was looking out for me, just there and just taking it all in. And the one moment I remember is against the Yankees, and Richie Zisk hit a ball on the roof, and
nice.
I remember, you know, all of us, I was paying attention enough, you know, you're a kid, I'm sure I wasn't
right.
paying a lot of it, paid attention enough to just watch the ball go up and up, up, and then it disappeared. And I thought it really was like the natural moment. It was like, what happened? And really all the fans were like, what
is just going happened?
On? Somebody had transistor radio and they're like, yeah, it went on the roof. And it was just a very strange, I mean, again, I don't want to date myself too badly, but it really was like, you know, everybody had their little, what do they call those? Like a corn cob hats or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, you know, and a guy's there with a megaphone calling out the lineups, but it really was a moment of a wonder. And, you know, I've seen hundreds of games since, but it was neat to have that sort of moment. And at a time, something that didn't happen, the plate was still far back.
Right. We
were putting balls on the roof left and right. And the fact
roof shots were rare. So, I mean, absolutely. That I'm sure everyone took notice of that.
Yeah. The fact that one of our guys did it, even though he was only brief.
In a small window.
The Polish prince waddled around the bases. But yeah, it was just like awestruck. And a pretty cool year to be, especially in that era.
Absolutely.
That was a very lucky season to be a first-time attendee, because everything after that, really until the win in Ugly Sox, it was rough going. I saw a lot of losses after that. So 77 was nice to be able to debut here in Ancy Faust, really get a picture of it, because just as you acknowledged with Comiskey Park, just going into that park was really, and you know, when you're that age, oh my God, it's like,
oh yeah,
not to be irreverent in the least, even though I am, it's like church. You go in there, you're like, oh my God, you see the grass. And I saw my first Chicago Stadium games right around that time
when
they debuted the spotlight, and it was exhilarating and terrifying at the same time.
Yep.
One day I'll tell you the story about how Tom Burleson got kicked out of a game, and I thought he was actually going to come out into the stands and attack me. I was so scared.
Oh,
he was
my gosh.
Tall. I was pretty young, but I thought he's going to get me. I was really blurry, like monster. It was like comic book and basketball at the same time. I admit it was a little silly, but anyway, we'll talk about Chicago Stadium some other time. But yes, interesting first game. So I take it yours was a loss. Mine was a loss too, but at least I guess I had a highlight. I do remember,
you had a highlight.
I do remember, Tommy, I have to say, I still have my Sox 9, my bootleg Sox 90, yes, t-shirt, bought outside the ballpark.
Nice.
Road tripped up from college to say goodbye to the park. So I was a junior in college for your first game, Tommy. So, God, I'll hide my gray temples. But it's interesting. You know, we were in the park technically, you know,
at the same time. You know,
Tommy just trying to work his way through one hot dog, and I was just
exactly
I was doing a lot. So okay, those are our first games, and you know, quaint, sweet story. Now let's segue into something that's a little less quaint and a little less sweet. It has been covered plenty, Tommy, including a couple Southside Sox podcasts, both of which went very blue, went very profane, even old geezer Lee Allen, and again he calls himself that, I'm not doing that to him, and Son, which I think they try to keep it clean because, you know, it's father son. I can't imagine,
right?
I mean, I should be doing a podcast with my dad and it would just erupt into cussing all the time, and it wouldn't be me doing it. So, and I just have to shut the lid, and be like, okay,
walk away. That's yeah, exactly.
Because Pop's lost it again. We lasted we're five done now. Minutes because he just hates baseball. So yeah, sorry, Pop, you deserve it. But you know, even they were cussing, for God's sake. Yep. So this is going to be a challenge to not go blue. But I've spouted my part and horrified some folks with my take on this. So Tommy, I'll yield the floor to you and just, I guess, tell me what jumps out at you is what's just happened in Minnesota with your mean Mercedes hitting a home run on 3-0, apparently ignoring a take sign in a blowout game.
Which you know didn't happen. There is, for one, there's rarely ever a take sign to begin with. You know that there isn't a take sign in a 15-4 ball game, you know, at the end of the game. There wasn't a take sign. That's La Russa trying to give additional credence and reason for him to enforce this unwritten rule. Because it's not enough to just say, oh, you can't swing 3-0. You have to make it seem like he intentionally disobeyed the manager and turn it into like this power dynamic that wasn't necessary at all.
Let's jump off with you on this. Of the main elements here, what actually happened in the game, how Tony treated Yermin, I guess, that night and the next day, and then even how he perhaps treated Lance Lynn the next day, what jumps out at you about this issue as the most I'm assuming there are many offensive things to you. What was the most egregious to you or the most damaging that you think Tony did with this team?
So the thing I have just no understanding or concept of how people can continue to defend Tony La Russa as a manager is that if you are of a certain old school mentality, you know that rule number one is that you don't air your dirty laundry to the media. You don't do things out in public. And for Tony La Russa to basically railroad his 28-year-old rookie that frankly doesn't know any better, if it is that he violated an unwritten rule, there's no reason to bring that out to light publicly. Secondly, if players are defending him or want to support him, there's also no reason to call out those players in a public way. And it's kind of, you know, I think Ozzie brought it up in, it was either post game or pregame the following day, where he was like, even if I don't agree with what the player did, there's no way I'm going to go out and publicly say, oh yeah, they made a huge mistake. You're going to defend your guy because that's what you do as the manager. Now, behind closed doors, you might say, don't ever do that again. But that's totally different than going out and to the press, to the public, saying, he made a mistake. I apologize to the Twins, which really, come on. And it's never going to happen again. And it's going to be taken care of, which basically just set up this really weird feeling, because I was covering the game after, and it was to me this really eerie sensation and feeling where, you know, Duffy threw behind your mean Mercedes, and Mercedes kind of looked around and was like, what the heck's going on? And usually when that happens, even if you know it's coming, you see all the players from both teams kind of chirping at each other, saying something, being like, what's going on? Right. And frankly, outside of Tim Anderson, it was dead silent from the Sox dugout.
Yeah.
And that was weird.
Let's not let that escape, because clearly it seems like sentiment is all behind Giolito post game was for, we like home runs. Lance Lynn obviously came out and said, hey, don't put a pitcher in. You don't want to get, you know,
yeah.
They've said the right things. We assume Adam Eaton probably doesn't believe that, but he didn't. Nobody asked.
Right.
He doesn't get on many Zooms. but that's a curious thing that there might be an explanation for. But the idea that Tim Anderson is rather profanely making his thoughts known about what just happened, Yermin you know, what, is he going to charge the amount? I mean, you know, he's got to play. No, he's in the game. You don't see Tony even making a token defense, and you don't see anybody else on the bench making noise. Now, I don't want to castigate too badly the rest of the team, but it's the fact that you point out that Tim did not hesitate, and nobody else is even like, oh, wait, Tim's yelling. Let's get, I mean, even if they were like a second late, like, oh, let's see what happened. Okay, now we can yell. Nobody got on the top step. I don't know if Tim did, but nobody got on the top step along with them to bark. Very curious. And I got to say, that's sort of creepy. And I got to throw a much bigger blanket. It doesn't just land on Tony here.
No.
What in the world's going on with that?
And that's where I, you know, I didn't want to read too much into it, but it was like, to me, that was where the shift happened, because you saw Rocco Baldelli going out there defending his player, like knowing full well, like everybody knew what was going on. Everyone knew what happened. And he was just standing around long enough for him to get thrown out of the game so he could go join his player in the locker room. Right. But you saw a commitment to defending your players, where your main Mercedes basically seemed like he was this guy on his own island. And there was kind of a lull from the White Sox after that happened. And it didn't surprise me in the least that they ended up losing that game, because it just felt like there was this gut punch that happened and they didn't know how to react.
Yeah,
to it.
You're waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. And it's just like, those were the kinds of things where I don't think that will ever come to anything during the course of a season, because the White Sox as a team seem to be so self-reliant within their players that they don't have to worry about like management to defend them. But I could see it being an issue in the playoffs. I could see it being an issue where if there's a critical game and somebody makes a mistake or somebody does something incorrectly, if a player is hung out to dry the same way that Yermin is, it was in that situation, that can be kind of hard.
Yeah, and when you think about a fact that, and again, this, the circumstances, I think I brought up how just I think a game or so earlier, Yoan Moncada had blown a sign, potentially prolonged the game, didn't turn out that way, but then Jose Abreu gets injured on the slide that is eventually the game-winning run a batter or two later. And again, he's a veteran. It's different circumstances. Yermin is a rookie. He is learning. He does have a particular effusiveness that may entail the need to sometimes say, okay, Yermin, here's focus. The focus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So understanding it's different. Lucas Giolito, what, 4 starts into the season, throws Ethan Katz under the bus by saying he was gassed.
Exactly.
And at that time, people were howling for Tony La Russa. And listen, I think it's fair. Again, the blanket's got to be a little bit broader than just being thrown on Tony here. I mean, we had Katz, we had Grandal, we had Giolito, who was visited on the mound and apparently didn't mention the fact that he was gassed. And then post-game, he says, hey, he didn't say, well,
I
you
was
know,
exhausted.
Looking, he didn't say, looking back on it now, I had adrenaline, I didn't realize it, but now I realize I was gassed. He didn't say that. He said, I was gassed, like, you know, further fueling the, you know, the crazy White Sox, you know, Twitter sentiment of, oh my, you know, get this guy out, he's going to kill the team or whatever.
Exactly.
Fair, but it can be both. And the problem is, you know, Lucas sort of got away with that. And that's, I seems far worse than swinging on 3-0 in a blowout game against a fat second baseman pitcher who's flying the ball 40 miles an hour.
Right. And that to me is where things get a little iffy. And I'm hoping that it doesn't become an ongoing theme, because I just think it's going to be exhausting just even from like, not even us talking about it, but even just from a player perspective, like that just seems exhausting to be like, okay, is this okay? But this isn't okay. But this is, you know, it's not sustainable at all. And I really, you know, for all of his faults, like the fact that Ricky Renteria always had his players back no matter what, to a fault probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I think instead of the players taking blame, he took the blame a lot of the time. And it's a really weird dynamic to switch to this where guys are kind of out on their own.
Tommy, it's ironic that that was clearly Ricky's strength. We have swung. It's like 180 degrees.
Absolutely.
That could have been what got him fired, because it was too close, because he wouldn't call out guys, because he didn't sit Edwin. And he was just like, Edwin and Encarnacion is going to come through. He's going to come through.
Go for
He's
it.
Got the yeah. bat suite. He's got that fast twitch. We're all still guessing why it could be. People point to that playoff game. I'm not sure I buy it. It's a single game. They're pointing about how he was in the dugout and he was like hunched over. I don't know. He's like into the, does that make him look lame? What is he supposed to be? Connie Magus in a suit, sit back, like smoking a pipe. I mean, there's some weird picking on going on in the playoffs. There has to be something more. And it would seem to me that it might be that intimacy where
Absolutely.
He can only get so much out of the guys. The guys knew they could maybe get away with a little too much. Now we have swung to the point where it's like, chemistry is not an issue. You're lucky if, I don't know, Tony, he doesn't slap you on the way out of the, at this point now, he's even measuring offices. He's right. got the ruler out saying, okay, I got an office. You got a locker.
My office is bigger.
My shirt's so, pressed. You know. I get a nicer meal. I get first class seat on the plane. What the hell is going on? I mean, you couldn't swing worse. And I don't, of course, Han never wanted this in the first place. But I mean, given that he signed off on it, he's still taking a paycheck from the White Sox. I mean, right. you couldn't have swung this uglier. And yeah, you do hate to see. I mean, Tommy, the thing that bothers me the most about this is every aspect, every element of this, everything I outlined, everything you reply back to me, it was all unforced. All of it is unforced. There's not Absolutely. A single thing here where it's like, oh my God, I had to swing my fist. I had to punch back. All of it's unforced, and it just gets any worse and worse, and it's not going to go away.
No, because every time they ask LaRusso a question, he keeps answering. And it's just like, that's the part that I don't get. Because even Giolito got to the point where it was like, yeah, we deal with things internally. Like, this is what we do, and we handle it, and we move on. And it's like, why couldn't LaRusso have said those words 3 days ago? Like, there was no reason at all for him to answer every time. And I mean, not to read too much into it, but I do think it's pretty damning that you even have active Major League Baseball players talking about it and tweeting about it and talking about how LaRusso's out of touch, because frankly, yeah, the Sox have the best record in baseball, but they're gonna need to acquire more players to have a sustained level of success. And are those players going to be interested in playing for somebody that's like this? And chances are probably not.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing people do bring out is, would you guys shut up and quit complaining? They're in first place. They have the best record in baseball, the best run right. differential, whatever. And listen, no doubt about it. And okay, yes, I understand. Maybe it does get into the category of oh, you know, I don't know, shouting at a cloud to some degree, but they could be better. Minnesota could be buried further. Let's not pat Tony on the back for doing a good job. Now, I could have done a worse job. This could be worse. Sure.
Right.
Is that the bar we're using to say, well, okay, let's keep him on. He's doing a great job because he hasn't killed the team, because he hasn't somehow seized control of the plane and crashed it.
But I mean, that's also why, like, I even brought up, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf's owned the Sox for almost 40 years now. They've made 6 playoff appearances. It's not like this is the Yankees, where year after year, they're making the playoffs, they're making a deep World Series run. This is a team that sporadically gets lucky and or good enough to make a playoff run, and then you don't hear from them again. So to just be like, oh, the Sox are in first place, you should be happy. It's like, no, as a Sox fan, you're always waiting for the wheels to fall off and for everything to go wrong. And don't just ignore all of these red flags that are occurring during the course of the season. Try to correct them if you can.
Are you trying to tell me, Tommy, the White Sox have not earned your trust?
You know, it's shocking, but it's true.
I mean, the fact that we're going to be celebrating, if all goes well, thank God for that god-awful AL Central. But if all plays out, that we're going to now be celebrating the first back-to-back postseason ever, which, by the way, is an asterisk postseason because 8,000 teams made it last year.
Still exactly. counts,
but I'd like to see them do it in 2022 to really say, yeah, we did it. Where, you know, we're like following that little Cubs layout of like whatever they had 5 years in a row or something. Yeah, somehow, yeah, they don't. Yeah, it isn't the Yankees where you go, you know what, this doesn't feel right. But you know, this whole like right. Billy Martin gets fired and they hire somebody. Yeah, you know, just it's going to work out. Just yeah, it's going to be fine. Yeah, I don't think the White Sox have ever earned
organization.
No, it's not the same thing. And you know, listen, the fact that we've got Rick Hahn and Ken Williams, and of course Jerry Reinsdorf, snoozing, napping on a bender. I mean, I don't know what they're doing. They have nothing to say. I don't blame them for not wanting to wade into this quicksand, but you know, they just keep sending, you know, when Don Cooper insinuated that like Michael Kopech had like mental problems, he right. not only got like a heavy wrist slap, but he did not talk to the media the rest of
no,
the year.
No, he was in isolation and for the rest of the year.
I mean, he's a coach, but he's a prominent coach. And yeah. given the fact that Minuchino and, you know, whoever, I mean, Mick Ewing was talking like 8 times on this. I mean, yep. you know, that was noticeable. Now, you can't do the same thing with La Russa, but the idea that he just keeps, as you say, keeps going out there, you know, you pull the string and he just says the same damn stuff like, no, Twins. Yeah, I see their point. Oh, yeah, I would have done the same thing. I mean, you got people, you got conspiracy theories that he told the Twins to do it.
Right. Exactly.
Which I'd say is crazy, except this is crazy.
At this point, it could be. But yeah, I mean, that's where I think it's weird. And it's like we talked about last time. I mean, even when Albert Pujols was you know, released, they didn't talk to Rick Hahn. They talked to Tony La Russa being like, hey, what roster moves are you going to make? Are you going to bring in Albert Pujols? Like, it's just, it is turned into Tony La Russa, this is your show. And I don't know if the rest of the White Sox front office or coaches agreed to it and just kind of said, hey, if things go awry, this is his show. I don't want any part of it. But no one else seems to be engaging with any conversations around White Sox baseball.
And, you know, I could see that. I could see that undermining. It was like spring training. I could see that. Well, okay, you wanted this. Now let's just watch what happens. He's headed right for the brick wall. But this is dirtying your brand. I mean, it's not like Rick Hahn is like, you know, it's not like a minor dude like, okay, well, let's hope this goes wrong and then I'll be proven right. And my memo that I wrote will be noticed. He's, you know, he's the guy that's going to fall out. People are going to go to him. He might say, well, I didn't want this. He's the GM. He, you know, he's going away. He's got to wear this.
Exactly.
The egg is on these guys. And I know they didn't want it, but
at some point you have to own it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what about Tony's track record indicates that letting him dangle, he'll like correct himself. Like just give him one day, he'll tire himself out. And the next day he'll be humble and he'll be like, you know what? I don't think that was the right move. That wasn't the right thing to say. No, right. He's just going to keep making it worse. He's going to New York. Tommy, he's going to New York.
Absolutely.
This is going to be a terrible weekend. Because they usually just wrap up media sessions really quick.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
They're not going to chase them down the hallway. They're not going to prolong it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we had to talk about this. I mean, it makes for an entertaining end to the podcast.
But I mean, that's why it's such a difficult topic to talk about without it turning into a tirade or a rant, because it's just, it is so fundamentally broken, the things that transpired, and there hasn't been any course correction whatsoever, and there's no indication of there being any course correction. So it's just, I mean, what do you say is going to happen? It can't fade away.
Yeah. And, you know, younger fans than us, Tommy, they might be like, well, get off your, you know, quit hi-hatting us on this. The White Sox have sucked for a decade. What, they've been a clown car for a decade. This is not what other teams might be able to play this like, oh, well, you know, the silliness is just par for the course. And as much as you point out, well, they don't ever make the playoffs. Before 2011, 2012, this has been a consistently competitive team, a team
Absolutely.
That most season goes into it, aside from almost the era you came into where they had that sort of ugly formative time where they were really bad, then they just exploded into the 90s. Maybe the era that I was born into, past Southside Hitman, late 70s, Vec had no money, ugly. But then they bought most years they're there. This is not a lovable loser fan base. Anybody who embraces that notion of, well, this is the way, even as we say it now, I mean, we can laugh, we can have that gallows humor because this last decade's been rough. And so we can say, hey, it's the White Sox, but that's not really it. That's not what a Sox fan's about. And the fact that we even have to slip into that with this whole Tony thing, like, we got a clown manager. It hurts, man.
It does. And, you know, it's like, they're not being good and being active or two different, like, and that's why people still talk about like the Drake LaRoche stuff and, you know, all that that happened under Robin Ventura's managerial career, because that was a clown show that normally, even in bad White Sox years, doesn't happen. You don't hear about the White Sox in that way on national media. And that's what's kind of embarrassing about this whole thing, is that there's already a spotlight because it's Tony La Russa, and everyone's kind of like, I don't know what the hell this club is doing, but let's see what happens. And you're waiting for him to make a fool of himself. Yeah. And anytime he does stuff like this, you're feeding it. You're feeding it.
Yeah, like in a general message board situation where all teams are participating, they're the routine disses of the White Sox and La Russa. And of course, I'm a Sox fan, so I want to bristle up. Like, but then what are you going to say? You're going to look like an idiot anything. Signing off on this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do that. And you know, you're not going to pile on either. It's like, oh, geez. When the window started opening, that's when this nonsense needed to stop. You know? I mean, even Chris Sale cutting up the jerseys, like, haha, but he's a Cy Young candidate. So it's like, okay, we can keep talking.
We can work with this.
If not for the fact that, you know, clearly he was going to leave free agency. You know, we didn't have him much longer. So of course the deal needed to be made, fine. But I mean, under different circumstances, we'd have got over that. The hurt, we would just known not to give him any throwback uniform days. Fine. No problem. Mm-hmm. That stuff was for the transition. Now we're in the window and it's still clowny. And it's actually still happening. It's worse because this team is in first place and it's clowny. First place in spite of. Not great. I'd rather be in first with a clown show than being last with dignity, but it's not an automatic answer.
No.
Gotta think for a second, like, what's better? And really neither's better.
No. And it's just like, you don't want it to get to the point where it stops being kind of like a fun anecdote. Like, you know, right now it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh yeah, if they go on a World Series run, we'll look back on it and laugh. And it's like, that's true. But if, you know, all hell breaks loose in July because somebody else did something that Tony La Russa didn't like and he decided to out half his roster, you don't want to be sitting there where none of the players feel like playing for him, or there's an outright revolt and it's chaos.
Yeah, this clown stuff should like fit on the back of a baseball card. Right now it is projecting to take a whole series of baseball.
Exactly.
We need it just to be a little blurb.
A little blip. Yeah.
You're like, wow, he really got off to a rough start, but man, then they won 50 in a row in the second half and everybody forgot the fact that he didn't like it when a guy swung on 3-0. But
right.
Boy, that doesn't seem to be the trajectory here, Tommy, and that's frightening. And they're going into New York, and it didn't even really hit me that they're going into New York on the heels of this, and now it's hit me that they're going to New York on the heels of this, and oh boy.
More opportunities to... Exactly.
We're going to have stuff to talk about.
More locker room comparisons, and
we'll be back at you on Believe in White Sox really, really soon, probably like tomorrow, because there's going to be stuff to talk about. We will probably try to talk with you guys again. Hopefully this listenership is just increasing exponentially. So we're going to have a lot of people to catch up with the next program and name out through our magic mirror. But probably in between these two series, because it's New York, there's probably going to be some crazy stuff happening. So we probably will have our next program coming up early next week. But thanks again, Tommy, for hopping on again. Boy, one day we're going to have like a 20-minute podcast, but it ain't happening anytime soon.
One day.
We'll just say, awesome week, 7-0.
Exactly.
Everybody did great. See you next week. But
exactly. Not yet.
Until then, we will be back in... as the White Sox world turns, we'll be back for episode 3 of Believe in White Sox real soon, everybody. But thanks for listening. Thank you to all the Barbies. You get an extra snack before bed tonight. Thank you for listening and being very polite and listening to Dad, because when he talks, you need to listen. Thanks, Tommy, for hopping on again, and we'll do this again real soon.
All right. Thank you.